And this bill is going straight to the floor. Is that correct?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This should be the last committee. We went through the HHS policy committee, and we came over here because of one particular provision relating to telecommunications.
Picked up $350.
That's our committee.
Yes.
That's good to see you. I don't know if you've been in front of us before.
I have not, Madam Chair.
That's a great one.
Well, Madam Chair, what we have here is the Department of Human Services Continuing Care Policy Bill. Continuing care covers long-term care services of people with disabilities and for seniors. The portion before us here today that is under your committee's purview is Article 1, the Telephone Equipment Distribution Program. This particular section of the bill is some technical policy changes. There are no fiscal impacts. And, Madam Chair, obviously I'm not on the committee, so if you've got someone that would move the bill for us, that would be good. But we do have someone from the department here to explain the changes.
Senator Magnus has moved Senate file.
Good.
I'm sorry. Senate file 1120. Senator Menino.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And is it Sarah? Mm-hmm. The department is here to speak to this section of the bill, Madam Chair.
Welcome. Ms. Ma. Please help me out here.
Madam Chair, it's Mahaswaran.
Mahaswaran, thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I am Sarah Mahaswaran from the Department of Human Services Telephone Equipment Distribution Program. The purpose of the TED program is to provide telecommunication equipment to eligible Minnesotans who have a hearing loss, speech, or physical disability that prevents them from using a standard telephone equipment. Now, the program provides the telecommunication equipment on a long-term loan basis, but does not pay for the monthly telephone service cost. And there are income guidelines to qualify for the program. I'm going to be referring to the background information sheet here for Article 1. There's three main changes that we're proposing for this TED statutes. Technical changes, policy changes, and program purpose clarification. So to start with the technical changes, we're basically wanting to update outdated language. For instance, the word impaired, we're wanting to change to disability. And same with communication device, we're requesting to change to telecommunication device. So those are examples of some technical changes, as well as deaf-blind, clarifying the definition on that as well. There's three main policy changes. One is to basically require the Department of Human Services to establish policies for the return of equipment when clients are no longer eligible. It's more cost-effective for the department to establish those policies. That's why we're recommending that. Secondly, for currently the department, in our current statute, it states that we would have to pay for outside wiring, but we are requesting to remove that language because we feel it's outdated and there's only been one request since the inception of the program for that.
And when was that, Ms. Mass-Warren, the inception of the program?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, it was 1987.
Oh.
And the third policy change is that relay users can file a complaint with telecommunication providers. It's basically stating that who can participate in a complaint process. The relay user can, being hearing or someone with a communication disability. And the last changes that we're proposing are program purpose clarification changes. Basically, we wanted to just clarify that anytime our staff see a client, we provide an assessment to the client to determine their needs. And we just wanted to clarify that in statute. And lastly, that we're included the language of functional equivalence in terms of the devices that we're distributing to clarify that we're providing functional equivalent devices. And this is in line with what the Department of Commerce uses for terminology. So we're just wanting to be consistent with that.
Thank you, Ms. Mass-Warren. Any questions for the department? No? Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just confirming that the Commission on the Deaf, Deafblind, and Hard of Hearing are familiar with the language and supportive.
Ms. Masswarn.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, yes, we are familiar with the definition and we support it. Is that what your question was? I'm sorry.
Senator Dibble?
The Commission on the Deaf, Deafblind, and Hard of Hearing.
Oh, okay.
No.
Ms. Masswarn.
Have they had an opportunity to interact with this bill?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, yes, I believe they are supportive of that definition. It's the same definition as our division of deaf and hard of hearing services.
Would anybody like to testify on that?
Just to respond, they do support the bill.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, super. Senator Nino, any closing comments? Anybody else that would like to testify? Anything else? Okay.
Madam Chair, I don't have any particular closing.
Okay.
I don't have any that I'm hoping that are offered. I don't know if anyone else does. That's the prerogative of the committee.
Okay. Super. No further questions?
Chairman.
Senator Metzen.
there's nobody opposed to the bill that I'm aware of. Nobody's come forward. So I'll make a motion to move that Senate File 1120 be recommended to pass and sent to the Senate floor.
Thank you, Senator Metzen. Senator Metzen.
Madam Chair.
Senator Nino.
I'm being informed that somebody apparently is working on an amendment that they're hoping to have considered here before your committee today. Maybe if we could just lay this over for a little bit. And my office is literally across the hall. I can be in here in short notice whenever that's ready and you're prepared to pick it back up again. I don't know what it is. Obviously, this is up to the committee as to what you want to do, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair?
Senator Metzen.
In the meat industries, if you get the order, you take it, you move on. Is that correct?
Huh? Certainly.
You know, something could happen on the way to the dance.
That's
all right.
Kill floor, that's for sure.
That's fine. I'll withdraw.
Madam Chair, I have no preference. I'm just
I hope you like this amendment, Senator Nino. That's the only thing I'm saying, because it might be sending you to a different committee.
Right.
Judge.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm being told that that particular amendment would actually end up sending it through Judiciary Committee. So maybe what would be best is if we could send this to the floor, and if it's a good amendment, I can offer it myself on the floor, and we can vet it with Senator Limmer in the meantime and get his pre-approval before that would be offered.
Senator, you know, that's a great idea. Senator Metzen?
I'll renew my motion.
Thank you. Senator Metzen renews his motion that Senate File 1120 be recommended to pass and sent to the floor. Any questions? All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed, nay. The bill does pass. Thank you, Senator Nino.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, appreciate your time.
Okay, committee, we have Senate File 417, Senator Tomassoni, the Excelsior bill. Now, members, this is just an informational hearing. We will not be taking a vote on this. And
come on.
It is just an informational hearing.
Senator Koch? Senator Sparks seems to want to vote on this.
Madam Chair.
Senator Tomassoni, good to see you.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here. Can we just, I realize it's informational and you don't want to take a vote, but can we do a delete all amendment so that we get the right bill in front of the committee so we know what we're working on?
Absolutely.
And it's an A1 amendment.
Madam Chair, I'd move the A1 amendment.
Senator Kubley moves the A1 amendment. Senator Tomassoni, could you please explain that, why it's being passed out? Maybe we have it.
Well,
we do have it in our packs.
I can explain the whole thing to you, but I think that since I want to work off the A1 amendment, I'd like you just to pass the A1 amendment.
Okay.
So it becomes the bill, and then we'll work off the A1 amendment, and I'll explain it.
Who's running the show here, Senator Thompson?
I was requesting that, Madam Chair. I was hoping you would. This one's way easier to understand than the original bill, anyway.
Is a good idea. Okay. Senator Kubley renews his motion on the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed, nay. Amendment is adopted.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam
Senator
Chair.
Senator Tomassoni.
I appreciate you.
The whipping?
Allowing me to do that. Let me just give you some background information on Senate File 417. There's a section in statute called Section 216B.1694, which is called the Innovative Energy Projects statute, which was passed in 2003 as part of a bill that expanded nuclear cask storage at Prairie Island. The legislation allows that the Public Utilities Commission to encourage cleaner coal technology for power generation, and the cleaner technology integrates a coal gasification facility with a gas-fired power plant. Since 2004, the Mesaba Energy Project has conducted the extensive environmental review required to obtain site and route permits from the PUC for 1,200 megawatts of new coal generation. And after completing the environmental impact statement process, including responding to over 700 public comments over a four-year period, the PUC issued the site and route permits in March of 2010, and the first baseload power plant site permits issued in Minnesota in over 30 years. In light of the current projections of low natural gas prices and the large amount of new intermittent wind resources being added over the next 5 to 10 years, substantial natural gas fire generation will likely be needed in Minnesota. Because the Mesaba project integrates a gas-fired power plant with a coal gasification facility, it is possible to stage the project and move forward with just the power plant at the site that could accommodate the later addition of gasification facilities if natural gas prices get too high. And so what the amendment basically does, Madam Chair, is allow for natural gas to be a fuel source in the Innovative Energy Project. And then I'll have Tom explain the rest of it so that you can understand why the rationale behind the amendment and why it's a really good idea to be doing this at this time. So at that time, at this, I'll turn it over to Tom Ostras, who is Chief Counsel for Excelsior Energy.
Thank you, Senator Thomas Lee. Mr. Ostras, welcome, and yep. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Senator. My name is Tom Ostras. I'm a counsel at Excelsior Energy. And I'll just back up a moment and say, whereas the original, the Delete All Amendment intends to achieve the exact same objectives as the bill as it was introduced, whereas the original bill attempted to change the definition of innovative energy project to include a gas plant, a plant that uses gas as a primary fuel. What we've done in the Delete All is we've simply added a subdivision 3, and rather than change the definition of innovative energy project, we simply stated affirmatively what the intended changes are meant to be. So if you look at the Delete All in subdivision 3, paragraph A is simply clarifying that if you move forward with just the gas plant first, you're entitled to the certificate of need exemption, essentially, that already has been granted for the 1,200 megawatts of coal that the Public Utilities Commission has already issued a site permit for. So it's saying if you move forward with just the gas plant, you're entitled to the incentives in Subdivision 2, Clauses 1 through 3. And that's basically the exemption for certificate of need, that's the ability to expand transmission, and that's the power of eminent domain. That's what happens under paragraph A. In paragraph B of the Delete All Amendment, we're acknowledging that we've gone through a very long contested case proceeding before an administrative law judge in order to get the environmental impact statement issued on this project. So the environmental impact statement looks at all of the environmental impacts of the integrated coal plant. And over a four-year period, we dealt with a lot of comments and went through that whole process and got a final EIS issued. So, and in subdivision 1, B1, that's saying that the site permit that was issued for the higher emitting integrated coal plant will be deemed valid if you just move forward with the much lower emitting natural gas plant in the first stage of this project. And then it's also extending the validity period of that permit to 4 years from the date the final federal or state pre-construction permit is issued, or an outside date, which we've said here is June 30th of 2019. Finally, in subdivision B2, we're saying that because we've been through the contested case proceeding before an administrative law judge on the environmental impact statement, as we move forward on the integrated plant with the air permit and the water permit, there won't be additional contested case hearings. Public comment will still be taken on those permit processes, but it simply won't be an official proceeding that's referred to the Office of Administrative Hearings. So the important conclusion here is that the bill was never intended to, and the Delete All Amendment confirms that the bill does not authorize any additional funding. It doesn't require any party to buy any power from any project. What the bill is intended to do is simply streamline the permitting process for a natural gas plant at a site that the state has already fully evaluated and considered and invested a lot of resources and time in characterizing. So we know that the site, that we have a site permit for the coal plants, is a good site for a large power plant. What we're asking here is that we be allowed to move forward and permit a gas plant and have that teed up as an option for the state, which would be an alternative that wouldn't otherwise exist, you know, but for this change. And again, if the plant is never needed, if no one ever wants to build a gas plant, it will never get built. What this bill simply allows is that we can move forward with permitting a gas plant, which is the first stage of the integrated plant. The other benefit, as Senator Tomassoni mentioned, is because we're at a site that we know can accommodate operation on coal, in the long term, if natural gas prices don't remain low, as we all hope they do, but in the event that they wouldn't, we know that this gas plant would be located on a site that in theory could accommodate later conversion to operation on coal, which I would suggest to the committee is a very important public policy aspect of this particular site. And it's another reason that we shouldn't, you know, we should move forward with the ability to permit gas at this site. And with that, I'm available to stand for any questions.
Mr. Ostris, now this plant would be for 400 megawatts of coal. It was originally appropriated.
Thank you,
exempt Senator. From the coal moratorium. Was it 400 megawatts? Is that correct?
No, Senator and members of the commission. The exemption was for the innovative energy project at that site. What we've proposed was actually 1,200 megawatts of
1,200,
coal.
1,200, excuse me.
So there's
so
two,
it's three of them. Right.
No, there's two 600 megawatt coal units.
Okay.
That the Public Utilities Commission has issued site and route permits for. And again, you know, there's been a lot of talk in recent weeks about the coal moratorium, and you know, we just point out to people that, in fact, the Public Utility Commission has issued permits that we currently hold for 1,200 megawatts of new coal. Now, that's for the IGCC technology, and we understand, because we've been at the commission, that they don't want the IGCC plant to get built, and that's the commission's, the Public Utilities Commission's decision. What we would propose to do here, if this bill would pass, is move forward with one natural gas combined cycle unit that would be on the order of 500 to 600 megawatts. That's what we would propose to be permitting, is one large combined cycle natural gas plant.
And Mr. Ostris, has the PCA weighed in on this?
Yes, Senator and members of the committee. We've met with both the PCA and the OES, or now the Department of Commerce. And they did. They gave us comments back on the bill as introduced, and we actually deleted one of the provisions. We had put a provision in the bill as introduced that would have required issuance of the final air permits by the PCA within 180 days of the final application. And they came back and pointed out two things. They said, one, because EPA will play a role, the federal EPA, in the permitting of the coal plant, that PCA can't guarantee that they can issue a permit within a fixed time period. And they said, in any event, because of House File 1, or the permitting bill that passed and was signed earlier this session, there's already a goal that's been established of issuance within 150 days. And we took those comments to heart and agreed that those were fair comments, and we removed that provision. So there's no longer, in this delete all amendment, there's not a provision that sets a hard deadline on issuance of the permits. But that was their comment, and we addressed it.
Senator Brown.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. You had mentioned that there's already been a lot of resources and time spent on this project. Can you tell me specifically how much time and dollars has been spent on this?
Mr. Ostris.
Yes, thank you, Chair and members of the commission committee. We started the process in 2004. We spent about a year preparing what's called an environmental information volume that we then submitted with our request for a site permit. The site permit application was formally filed in June of 2006, and that initiated a process for environmental review that continued through last spring. And it was last March when the environmental impact statement was deemed complete and the Public Utilities Commission issued the site permit. As far as the resources that have been expended, there have been a lot of effort and time on the part of the state regulatory agencies. I mean, the Department of Commerce suffice it to say, it's in well into the hundreds of thousands of dollars that were spent by state officials reviewing every aspect of this proposal. I'm not sure what further information you're seeking.
Madam Chair, is it accurate that we've contributed over $10 million from the RDF fund toward this project?
Mr. Osterson?
Yes, Senator Rosen, members of the committee. Yes, the RDF funding was part of the original bill that Senator Tomasoni mentioned. We were made eligible for funding from the RDF project. We applied for that in an ordinary solicitation for RDF funding, and the Public Utilities Commission approved that and awarded that funding, I think in 2005, if memory serves. And that was $2 million per year over a five-year period. And those funds have been used as part of this permitting and engineering of the integrated coal plant. That's correct.
So,
Senator Brown.
Madam Chair, are you telling me that we've spent $10 million to get environmental permitting done? Is that what I understand you to say?
Mr. Osterson.
Senator Rosen, members of the committee. Yes, and it's more than that. And that's not uncommon for large infrastructure projects. I was at a hearing at the House earlier in the year when I think U.S. Steel was testifying about an expansion project they have up on the Iron Range, and they've spent over $20 million just to expand existing facilities, and they weren't yet through the process.
Is it not uncommon in Minnesota, or is it uncommon across the country? Or can you comment to that?
Mr. Osterson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, it's not unique to Minnesota, but I will say that in Minnesota it's more difficult than in most other states. I don't think, for instance, the cost would be as high in some of our neighboring states. I do know that it is the case around the country that permitting large infrastructure projects, particularly coal-fired ones, has become very, very difficult and extremely expensive. There was just a few weeks ago in Kentucky, there was a cooperative utility there, the Eastern Kentucky Power Cooperative, that had spent about 4 years on a new coal plant that they just canceled, so they're not going to build it. And they had to get approval to recover over $150 million. Now, in that case, they had already started ordering equipment for the plant, but a large portion of that would have been for design, engineering, and permitting. So it's not uncommon. That's just what it was.
Madam Chair and Senator Brown,
Senator Tomasoni,
you've probably heard a little bit about the PolyMet project that we're trying to permit on the Iron Range also, and they've spent over $25 million in the environmental impact statement. They still haven't gotten through that. So
and that's the process.
I'm not exactly sure what we spend all this money on, but I know that all this stuff costs a lot of money, and it ends up being very expensive to
Madam
get things
Chair, permitted. It sounds like an argument for a repeal to me. Thank you,
Senator.
Senator Howell.
Madam Chair, I think there's a big difference between private dollars being spent and ratepayer dollars being spent. And, you know, I don't think the RDF, the money being spent on this particular project, falls within the mission statement of the PUC's mission statement of what the RDF funds should be used for. But with that being said, mm-hmm. have air permits been issued for this project? Out of the $10 million that we spent on environmental, has actual air permits been issued?
Mr.
Chair Rosen, members of the committee, no. The air permit is pending. We're working on that with the PCA at the moment.
Madam Chair.
Senator Howe.
Madam Chair, I have some concerns then about Section 2. If the air permits haven't been issued, why would we codify no air, water, or other permit issued by a state agency that is necessary for the construction of an innovative energy product shall be subject to a contested case hearing? Why would we do that? I mean, if the permits haven't been issued, why would we take away someone's ability to question or to contest that, especially if it affects someone?
Mr. Osterson.
Chair Rosen, members of the committee. Respectfully, I would suggest we're not taking away anyone's ability to participate in the process. And the real answer is that the environmental impact statement process, which again started in June of 2006 and concluded in March of 2010, looked at all of the environmental impacts of the integrated plant. So it looked at all of the air emissions. There was a lot of air modeling done. It looked at all of the water appropriation issues. It looked at all of the water discharge issues. In fact, we modified our design in response to comments on water discharge. And that was all before an administrative law judge at the Office of Administrative Hearings. And that was part of the expense, frankly, and the time that was taken in vetting all of the environmental impacts of this project. And so now the pre-construction permits are a narrower subset of all the environmental impacts. So we have the PCA will process the air permit DNR will process the water appropriation permit. In the case of the air permit, once PCA has completed the process, which will be open to public comment, and there'll be hearings that are held, once they've completed that process, because Minnesota is a delegated state, there's then the ability to go to the Federal Environmental Protection Agency and have another look at the air permit. So there will be another opportunity beyond the current proceeding that's pending.
Madam Chair, but there's a big difference between having public comment and being part of the process. I mean, this takes away the opportunity for a local government to be an intervener or some other organization or to intervene in the process and actually participate in the process rather than, just
right.
I'm going to hear and I'm going to do whatever I want in the future. I mean,
sure.
You're taking away the ability to have a thorough vetting by doing this, and you're going to short-circuit the system. I mean, there's a lengthy process with the PCA, the PUC, the OES,
right.
And I don't think you should shortchange what's been determined on an EIS from someone not agreeing with the administrative law judge's decision. So, I just think that you're going to – this is a major diversion or I'm looking for the right word here, that this is a major change in the way we do business, and I don't think it's a minor one that we should just brush over.
Senator Hall, there's no brushing over here. I think the point is that the coal plant has gone through all the processes that needs to be gone through, and the bill itself is asking for the plant to be allowed to use natural gas as opposed to using coal. And so to site a natural gas plant on exactly the same site as the coal plant would be with much fewer emissions and a cleaner type of process. The coal plant has gone through everything it needs to go through for these particular emissions. And so we're just saying that in the event that we do build a gas plant, that it's that all the qualifications that were applied to the coal plant should now apply to the gas plant, and that's what it's asking for.
Chair.
Senator Howe.
Madam Chair and Senator Tomasoni, if the air permits had been issued, I would agree with you. I would agree. But in this case, they have not. And since they have not, I don't think, I understand it's an informational hearing, but I will not support anything that takes away someone's right to intervene in the process and actually have a seat at the table.
Mr. Osterson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, Senator Howe. Two points of clarification. First of all parties had an opportunity to intervene and participate throughout the EIS process, and many of them did. So that's one point. The federal review process would entitle any party to intervene and participate. That's a second level. Then the other point of clarification is that this particular provision applies to the integrated coal plant. So the gas plant will have its own separate proceeding. Gas plants don't typically require proceedings before the Office of Administrative Hearings. You don't typically have a formal contested case because a gas plant is less controversial. But if it made sense to have a contested case about the gas plant, that would still happen. This provision is limited to, because the definition of innovative energy project has not changed. So this provision about waiver of contested cases applies only to the integrated coal plant that already went through the 4-year contested case proceeding, just to clarify. Thank you.
Senator Elm?
I guess we'll agree to disagree on the proper vetting, but I see that as an issue for me on that.
Happy to follow up with you later.
Senator Dibble.
Madam Chair, we're going to have some testimony.
Yes, we are.
I can
we have more testifiers. Anybody else for Mr. Osterson or Osterson? Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mr. Dorkinson. No, you're not speaking. You're on the list. So would you like then to... Senator Dibble, since there's no one else from Excelsior, any questions for Mr. Osterson?
No, Madam Chair. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Osterson. Appreciate it. Mr. Evans.
Stay here.
Yeah, you can sit on this side.
Good heavens, Carl Evans.
You have your own song and singer, Mr. Evans.
What was that, Sparky?
We had auditions earlier. So.
Yeah.
He won. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Rick Evans with XL Energy. Just wanted to make a couple of brief comments and make clear it's not our intention here to oppose this bill, and it's not our intention here to ask for any changes to this bill. But since you were having a hearing on the Excelsior Energy project, we did want to draw attention to the provisions in the original law in 2003 have a section which, and I believe I'll quote it correctly, that says the Innovative Energy Project, which is the coal project, is entitled to enter into a contract with the utility that owns a nuclear power plant for 450 megawatts of energy. That's a somewhat unclear section of statute, and there's been a lot of debate in front of the Public Utilities Commission over what that means. My main purpose for speaking today is to reiterate, and I think Mr. Ostris has already said this, that if the project is able to be built as a gas plant, there is that provision about being entitled to enter into a contract with XL Energy does not apply, and that we are not, whatever your interpretation of that provision might be, we're not in any way obligated to enter into a negotiations or have any kind of a contract for the purchase of this energy. And I thank Mr. Ostrich for making that clear. That was my main reason for wanting to come and testify. If in the event that a coal gasification plant is ultimately built on this site, then I think we're going to have, you know, continuing discussions about what that provision of statute means in terms of what entitled to enter into a contract with XL Energy means. But that's not a discussion necessarily for today, perhaps in some future hearing. But that was my reason for being here to testify. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Evans?
That's not in there.
And Madam Chair, I sort of remember,
Senator Thomason?
Since this was part of the cask storage bill, I sort of remember sitting in the room with XL and agreeing to the language of the Innovative Energy Project. But maybe Mr. Evans has a different recollection of it than I do, but I just want to point out that this bill has absolutely nothing to do with that particular power purchase agreement's statement. It's about being able to use the same site for a gas powered plant, and I think the main reason for it is because if you take a look at the infrastructure that we have available in the state of Minnesota, and the EPA rules that are governing coal plants at this point in time, you're going to be seeing power companies that have coal plants making decisions whether or not to retrofit their emissions or actually shut down those plants and go to some other type of energy. And the fact of the matter is that there's several, I think there's 700 or 800 megawatts of power that are probably in question as to whether or not some of the power companies in the state may actually retrofit these plants to clean up the air. And if they decide not to, natural gas might be a very viable option for them to augment their base load or to at least have the same amount of base load as they have now. And by allowing this particular plant or project to have natural gas as a fuel, allows it to use the site and the environmental processes that have gone through already to this point in time and actually be able to build the thing and not have to go through another 9 or 10 years of trying to figure out whether or not you can site it. So it just makes a lot of sense to prepare Minnesota for the next step.
Senator Thomasoni, I know that the project has received a loan from the IIIRB.
Mm-hmm.
How much was the loan, and has that loan been have you used all the money from the loan, and where is it at right now?
As far as I know, it was about $9.5 million, and I think the money's been used. We're basically waiting for a project to happen, and we'll get paid back at the point in time when they start generating some money. But you can't basically ask somebody who doesn't have
a
project.
Pretty vague,
that's
Senator Thomas. Huh? That's pretty vague.
What's vague?
We think sometime we'll pay back. Or
well,
Well,
it's a loan that's going to be paid back. It's just a matter of how do you pay back a loan if you don't have a project that's producing money.
So the terms are pretty loose.
Is that what you're saying? They're loose. I don't think so. I think they.
Mr. Ostis, can you clarify that?
I think they have a very, very high interest rate. If you want to know the honest to God truth, but that's accumulating right now. But
thank
go
you,
ahead,
Chair, members of the committee. Yeah, the IRR loan agreement provides that once the project moves forward, once the project you know, goes into construction and moves forward, that the, there's repayment terms, and it's with interest. So
we're gonna get the money back.
Any other loans, funds, anything else that has helped facilitate this project?
You have federal money, right?
Federal dollars?
Yes.
From DOE?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And how much was that, Mr. Masters?
And I think there's an 80% loan guarantee from the DOE also, right?
Chair Rosen, members of the committee, the Department of Energy has a whole program going back to the Bush administration that's called their Clean Coal Power Initiative. And in 2004, they solicited applications for funding from the Clean Coal Power Initiative from all around the country. Utilities from all over the country applied. Okay. We applied, and in this competitive solicitation, we were selected for funding in the amount of $36 million under the Clean Coal Power Initiative.
Okay. Senator Dibble?
And, Madam Chair, is that a grant or is that a loan?
Mr. Esters.
Yes, Chair Rosen. That's a loan under the Clean Coal Power Initiative.
And
Mr. Senator Dibble.
And the loan guarantee that Senator Tomassoni mentioned, that's to guarantee private financing for.
So Mr. Ostris.
Chair Rosen, Senator Dibble. The loan guarantee program is separate. That's a separate program that Department of Energy has for large infrastructure projects. The Mesaba Energy Project is authorized to receive a loan guarantee, but unless and until it goes forward, there won't be one, obviously. And it would most likely be funded through the Federal Financing Bank.
Senator Dibble?
Madam Chair, I know that the legislative auditor was fairly critical of the use of the loan proceeds from the IRRRB. Have those issues been dealt with and cleared up?
Mr. Ostris?
Yes, Senator Rosen, Senator Dibble. Yes, we responded. They made recommendations in their final report, and we heeded the recommendations. So, yes.
Senator Dibble?
That's all I have for now,
okay.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Madam Chair. I'm not sure I have a clear picture on just how much money has been put into this project. We talked about the $10 million from the RDF.
Right.
And now I've heard, I think you said $9.5 million from the IRU
right.
loan.
Correct.
Is that the total, $19.5 million, or what amount of money has been put into this project so far?
Mr. Ostris.
Senator Rosen, members of the committee, the primary funding sources for the project are the IRR funds, the $9.5 million, the RDF funding, and the federal funding under the Clean Coal Power Initiative. So those are the three sources, and those are $9.5 million at IRR, $10 million from the RDF fund, and then $36 million was the award from the Department of Energy. That hasn't all been.
So, Madam Chair, help me wrap my brain around how that money gets spent. I mean, does it go to lawyers? Does it go to excavating? What? I'm trying to picture how that amount of money gets spent, and we can't see anything.
Mr. Ostris.
Senator Rosen, members of the committee, it's primarily, you know, engineering firms, it's environmental consultants, it's lawyers, it's, you know, getting through all of the regulatory proceedings at the state and federal level for a very large project. I think everyone in the room is familiar with the Big Stone project, and you know, they moved forward for a number of years kind of in parallel, and then canceled that project. And I believe the number that they had referenced at the Public Utilities Commission is that they had spent over $50 million in that process. So it's not uncommon for all of these large infrastructure projects to incur significant expenses. And in the case of utilities, obviously when they do it, that's just, you know, direct ratepayer funding. In our case, it's kind of a public-private partnership.
Right.
So, Madam Chair, it's not uncommon in the light of how Minnesota regulates this industry. That's what's not uncommon. Is that accurate?
Senator, Mr. Ostris.
Senator Rosen. Senator Brown. It's not uncommon for a large power plant project anywhere in the country, I would suggest. It will be tens of millions of dollars to get through the permitting, siting, regulatory approval process. That's true it may be more difficult in Minnesota than in some other states, but order of magnitude, it's a very expensive undertaking in any state.
Thank you.
To that point.
I trust me when I say I wish it were not so difficult.
Madam Chair.
I believe Senator Benson was first and then Senator Dibble. To that point, Senator Benson.
To that point and then
yes.
Another.
Absolutely.
Any private dollars? I have $9 million from the IRRRB, 10 from RDF, 36 from the feds that you're drawing on. Any private money in this yet?
Mr. Ostris.
Senator Rosen, members of the committee. Yes, there are private contributions. I'm not at liberty to disclose what they are. We are a private company. They're significant private commitments and contributions.
Okay. Senator Benson? We'll come back to you, and I have Senator Dibble, Senator Howe, and Senator Metzen. I believe Senator Dibble, to that point.
Well, Madam Chair, I'd encourage Senator Brown to read the legislative auditor's report from four or five years ago to understand better how the thank you. So it's not all just regulatory I mean, there's also spending it on lobbying, also spending it on their own research and economic development and stuff. So I think we're quick to jump to some conclusions about how much money has been spent. I actually jumped to an opposite conclusion, which is how is it that we're able to spend all this money for this business idea that still doesn't have a customer and still isn't demonstrated to be viable? And it's not all the money that we've put into this project. It's all of the policy advantages that we've built in time and time and time again, you know, with special considerations for power purchase agreements and how we define this particular. I mean, at one point they were trying to construe this as a renewable, and going to the renewable development fund for dollars. So, I have similar questions. I think I come to a slightly different conclusion. What is all this money being spent on after all this time, and why don't we have
Madam
a project?
Senator Thompson.
To Senator Dibble's point, when we actually did this legislation back in 2003, Mr. Evans can correct me if I'm wrong, but if I remember correctly, the Xcel Energy Resource Plan stated that they would be in need of 3,500 to 5,000 megawatts of baseload power sometime in the next 10 or 15 years, and I believe it was before 2015 at that time. And so the need is one of the things that was moving this project forward, and then the technology was another thing that was helping move it forward because it was much cleaner than conventional coal or even the new coal plants that they have. There was also significant use for the byproducts that were coming out of the plant, and so there was reason to do it. Since then, I think with our Renewable Energy Act that we passed, the power companies have definitely changed their focus on where they're going to try and get power because we're forcing them to do that. And I think also with the recession happening when it did, I think the demand for power has probably gone down because, or it had gone down at least in the years of between 2009 and 2010, just because of the fact that many of our big power users weren't using as much power as they could have. At one point in time, we didn't have any taconite plants producing pellets on the Arid Range. And,
2009.
Yeah.
Just heard about it in tax committee.
Exactly. And so at that point in time, you're about 60 or 70% of the power's load is not being used. And so the whole sequence of events that has happened since we started this until where we are now has basically resulted in why nothing has been built and why the need for the base load has changed. And so I think we're at a point where we're trying to make something happen here because of the potential for cleaning up the smaller power plants that are coal-based and are really old, and that the EPA, the federal EPA, is requiring certain stack emissions changes or shut the thing down. And so what they have to decide, and I'll give you an example, Boswell 4, has a stack that Minnesota Power is planning on investing about $450 million into to renovate it, and they believe that's a good investment because they need Boswell 4, but Boswell 1 and 2 might have the same problem, and they don't know if investing that much money or more than that in those is going to be worth it to them, and those are the kind of things they have to make a decision on in regards to whether or not the investment meets the needs. And so I'm sure there will be some very interesting shareholder meetings and decisions to be made within companies as to how they proceed in not too distant future with the current resources that they have and how they decide to allocate the resources and which types of power they decide to spend their money on. So this at least gives this particular project the option to use a different fuel as well as possibly meet a need that could be surfacing in the very near future. Just on the Iron Range itself, we have SR Steel that we believe will be up and running in the next few years. It will be a huge power user. If PolyMet starts up, that will be another big power user. And if Minnesota Power makes some decisions on their smaller plants, and I don't know what decisions are going to be, but it's possible that they could shut a couple of things down. They may need some more baseload power. And I don't know if Xcel is in the same situation or not, but that's just a little bit of a, I think, of a pretty little snapshot of this particular project and why I'm sitting here in front of you today and asking for this particular bill to be passed.
Senator Dibble.
Madam Chair, that's why we have all the processes we have in place, and I don't know why we're creating all kinds of exemptions for this particular proposal. If, in fact, there is the need, why exempt this facility from the certificate of need as it has been? If there's the, you know, if we could demonstrate the economics, you know, that's what the process is for. If in fact it does have a lower environmental profile and it can bring the fuel to the site without disruption, you know, and the facts demonstrate, you know, then that's why we have an EIS examination so that we can get the facts on the table. And if the facts are in dispute, then to Senator Howe's point, there's a process for someone else being able to provide different kinds of facts that are available for consideration, not simply observing and making some sort of irrelevant commentary on the process. You know, it's very possible and very likely that everything you're saying is true, and therefore the process would unfold as it's designed to do so now. I don't know why we continue to put the thumb on the scale on behalf of this particular power producer's development project, and the thumb still isn't enough, and so they put a few more thumbs in terms of policy considerations for this particular project. You know, it's just like time and time and time again, this project returns to the legislature for special consideration and special treatment for money and for special policies.
Well, Madam Chair, this is the first time I've come back to the legislature with this bill since the original bill was passed. And at that time, all the things that you're asking me about were determined to be necessary in order for the project to go forward. But it seems to me if natural gas is the way to go with this particular project, that would be something you would like, Senator Dibble, because I think it's even cleaner than the IGCC particular process that would be used for the combined cycle plant,
yeah.
And that it's probably cheaper to build, and I've got a and my understanding is there's no water discharge from it either, so it gives the project an option that it doesn't currently have.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dibble.
It also continues to retain fairly significant eminent domain power and authority too. I mean, so you know, the skids are greased already for this plant. I don't know why we're creating more exemptions and exceptions and special provisions in state law for it.
Mr. Osters.
Hi, Madam Chair, Senators. Yeah, I would suggest that this particular bill is not creating additional exemptions. It's really clarifying that within the exemption that currently exists, you can move forward in a staged fashion and just build a gas plant first. And again, it's not requiring that happen. It's simply teeing it up as an option that wouldn't otherwise be available.
I have Senator Howe, Senator Metzen, and then Senator Benson. Senator Howe.
Just going back to the money issue here, you know, I heard $36 million award. How much of that money, and I've got a follow-up here, how much of the $36 million award has been spent? just a guesstimate.
Senator Rosen, approximately $20 million, I think.
$20
million. Senator Howe?
Okay, so now we're at close to $40 million of public money that's been spent, and we don't know how much private money has been spent on this project tonight. I would just say that, you know, I've heard a lot of ifs, and I also just heard Senator Tomasoni. I kind of feel for you sitting in that chair there because I also heard that this possibly might meet a need in the future. And it seems like a lot of money's been being spent on an if or a possibility for the future. And things have changed. And I would say that even things have changed, as you know, in this body. And we need to make sure that that we're using a common sense approach. And it has to make sense. I mean, we cannot be spending ratepayer money. We can't be spending taxpayer money. If some private fund wants to go out and do an IPO and do their private deal, that's fine. They can go off and risk whatever they want on it. But when we're making special accommodations, I think the need needs to be determined. It needs to be met. And it needs to be a high standard. And we can't be working on these what-ifs and possibilities. And unfortunately, you know, I think this there's a lot of work that needs to be done to make sure that this is going to be a financial return, a return on investment. There's just one heck of a lot of money that's been spent, and I think times have changed. So I guess I appreciate the information, but I'm glad we're having an informational hearing on it.
Madam Chair and Senator Howe, you weren't around at the time when we did this, but a little bit of the information that you should know is that back in 2001, LTV plant, taconite plant, was closed down. We lost 1,400 jobs on the Iron Range, and this was one of the responses that we had to try and generate some more jobs on the Iron Range to replace those 1,400 jobs, as well as another project which was called Mesabi Nugget. Anytime you try and do a big project like these, whether they're mining projects or whether they're power projects, it takes a really long time to get from the start to the finish. And I've been experiencing the frustration of trying to develop jobs and try to create jobs on the Iron Range for years. And in fact, the SR Steel project, the first time I got involved in that was 1996, and we just now we're starting to pour cement. And so this is not atypical when it comes to trying to develop a big project and trying to create jobs. What I have before you here today is just an attempt to make it a little bit more convenient to do it. And I'm confident that something's going to happen here just because of what's going on, not only on the Iron Range, but what's going on in regards to our federal air permits and our federal air requirements, and that that something's going to happen. I don't think we're going to reduce the need for power in this state. I think it's probably going to increase. But for sure, if we start closing down baseload plants, we're going to need some substitution for it. So, the history goes back quite a ways. I'm sensitive to what you're saying about the public money and trying to build the thing and whether or not there's a need. But at the same time, we were creating job opportunities, and we're still trying to make sure that it happens.
Madam Chair and Senator Tomasoni, I'm sensitive to that. I know we serve on the Jobs and Economic Growth Committee together, and we want to see additional jobs. But what I just heard here today was Excel saying, well, now if you go this direction, we're off the hook. And if you're going to stretch the RDF to make that Excel was required to buy it under the old program and they're not required to buy it under this program, you know, I just don't know how the financials work, and I'll need to learn a lot more about it. But it has to meet a very high standard, and I think that's why it's good that we're having this informational hearing on it. But I just wanted to share those concerns.
Senator Domsoni?
He's just sharing his concerns.
Okay.
We'll get someone to go talk to him and tell him all the answers to his questions. Yeah. How does that sound?
Senator DeMitha?
Yeah, well, I guess, Madam Chair, we've been talking about the baseload needs. You know, you read in a paper quite often here in the last year about PolyMed, Mesabi Nugget, mineral explorations, additional mining operations. I think I saw one map in the Minneapolis paper not too long ago with about 7 or 8 new locations for potential projects up there. And I think a couple are underway already. And you would think that they would be heavy consumers of this product. And where is that going to come from? Does Elite have enough generation now? I mean, there's going to have to be, I would think, more megawatts in the region. You know, and when I was on that conference committee in 4, I think the estimate was like 5,800 additional megawatts by probably this year or next year. And I think that's gone down some for other reasons, but I think there's still a need for, in our region, for on our grid for additional megawatts. So you would think that you would, I don't know if you have any estimates on those potential plants up there, what they're going to need, but I would think that'd be another reason to kind of look hard at this project.
And
Senator Thompson.
Madam Chair and Senator Metzen.
More of a statement, I guess.
That's kind of what I was alluding to earlier, that we have some big projects that are being queued up and are actually being built. Mesaba Nugget is actually now generating product, and SR Steel is in the construction stage. And so those are two of the big ones. But Mr. Ostris just pointed out that USX talked about a $20 million environmental impact statement, and all they're doing is restarting a line that they used to use back in the 80s. And so it's the type of thing. Mesaba Nugget, for example, is having all kinds of trouble opening a pit that in 2001, when LTV was an active mine, they were using that pit. And now, because the pit filled up with some water, there's all kinds of water issues as to whether or not Mesaba Nugget can now get back into that same pit. And so, you know, things change over time. And so when we first passed the legislation, there were it was for all the right reasons. I think all the things that have happened since then have maybe complicated the matter, but I think you're right, Senator Metzen. There's some potential there that we have absolutely no idea what the need's going to be. And I think at some point in time, there's going to be a need for more baseload.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How much more public money are you going to need to bring this plant online?
Mr. Ostris.
Chair Rosen, members of the committee, no additional public funding. And we're not requesting any, and there's not going to be any.
Senator Benson.
Madam Chair, does that include no further drawdowns on your federal dollars?
Mr. Ostris.
Senator, the portion of the federal award that's available is almost fully drawn, so there won't be much more.
Senator Benson, follow up.
Madam Chair, I just seems like, again, we've put a lot of money into something. It's not clear that there's a demand. I don't know that those businesses would have opened on the range without some calculation as to the availability of power. And so I question, again, we can't get information on the private investment, but I question how many private individuals are going to put their money in, and have we already, is this money we should just consider lost? I'm concerned that the IRRRB money is not going to be paid back if we don't move forward. On the other hand, people who come for public money have the habit of coming back for public money when things just don't work out exactly right. And so that's my concern with this facility. If we need it, then let's get a statement of need and be clear about it and make the investors comfortable and start working on getting some of our government monies paid back. And I guess more of a comment than a question, Madam Chair.
And Madam Chair, Senator Benson, that's my
Senator goal. Thompson. My question is, what I also learned this morning is that all the mining companies are up and running and at full capacity. So Minnesota Power obviously is filling those needs. And I'm wondering how much more capacity they have. Anybody from Minnesota Power would like to comment on that? Reluctantly. Come on up, Steve. Yeah, he's blushing.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Steve Gard, Minnesota Power.
Our current resource plan shows that we have enough capacity for the near future, but as discussed further out, you know, it's we have other options and things that come into play, so it's questionable further out, but the immediate needs are taken care of.
So your IRP says you're taken care of for how many more years? How long ago
years.
Was that?
Oh, in the Polymed,
three?
Yeah.
3 years.
Connected.
Okay, Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Madam Chair. To that point, to Senator Metzen's earlier point, I mean, we have processes for finding out whether or not these things are true. The process is not preordaining the need for a particular power plant in a particular site. Legislatively, we have integrated resource planning, we have certificates of need, we have the Public Utility Commission does a larger scan of our needs and our knowing everything that supports that, the transmission, larger transmission needs, and the like. And it helps us avoid things like speculation, you know, and overbuilding and building expensive plants that ultimately ratepayers pay for. They pay for all the capital costs, you know. And it creates a lot of expense and drives a lot of cost. And we have a lot of debate about keeping energy low and that being one of our competitive advantages in this state. And if everything that's being said is true, the processes we have in place will support that. And this plant will be fine.
Senator Rosen, Senator Dibble, renewable energy bill certainly isn't something that's going to keep the cost of energy low in the state of Minnesota. In fact, every one of those sources of power, with the possible exception of solar, is more expensive than the baseload power that has been generated through coal and natural gas. And so we're not going in the direction of cheaper power in Minnesota. I think we're going in the direction of more expensive power. But having said that, as I stated earlier, we do things with public money all the time in the state of Minnesota to try and develop jobs. And this is exactly what this was when it was initially passed in this legislature, and it was in a direct response to losing 1,400 jobs in an area of the state that was very vulnerable to loss of more jobs. And I know it hasn't happened yet, but we're here today to try and make it happen, and I'm hoping you all can understand that.
Okay, and before we get to Senator Dibble, we do have two more people that would like to testify. Senator Dibble?
Well, Madam Chair, I think the statements about the cost of renewable energy are way overblown. It's still a tiny, tiny fraction of what we provide in this state, and we know. And we don't preordain, you know, specific projects and mandate the power purchase agreement, you know, and that sort of thing. We're talking about blends and mixes, and we know the economies of renewable energy are such that provides a ton of jobs, and the costs are coming down dramatically and rapidly. And if you look at the cost trends, you know, it'll be a very advantageous part of the mix. This is a completely different prospect altogether. This is preordaining a specific facility and then telling the power. In the past, I mean, I know that Xcel says they're off the hook now, but, you know, you're still holding out the possibility this will be an IGCC plant. You know, saying thou shalt here at this site. And, oh, by the way, you don't have to go through environmental review. And, oh, by the way, you don't have to do this and you don't have to do that. You know, never sought those kinds of advantages for renewable energy.
Madam Chair, Senator Dibble,
Senator Thomasoni.
The renewable energy bill was all about preordaining and about making power companies do things they didn't want to do.
And it had significant off-ramps built into it and a lot of economic concerns.
And there, in fact, Xcel has to have, I think, 30% by 2025, and everybody else has to have 25% by 2025. And they're all doing. We have ten windmills on the air in range that cost Minnesota Power $50 million to put up for 50 megawatts, and wind is definitely a premium power source. So it's not as if we're not doing this in this industry all the time.
Senator Howell, and then we're going to move to the other testifiers.
Madam Chair, Senator Thomasoni, I guess what you describe as cheap power is maybe in the behind of the. In the eye of the beholder, because I think if you talk to the folks over in Japan, they may not say that their power is so cheap anymore. So what is cheap today may not be cheap in the long run. And so I think that's what some of the renewable energy mandates and limits are looking towards. But you need to look long term, and certainly you know, one can argue about the subsidies that we give to various organizations, and we seem to subsidize a lot of energy. So I guess it's up to debate what's cheap.
Thank you. Mr. Osters, you could stay up there. Mr. Rich from Atmosphere Recovery, please.
Oh, you okay? Oh,
geez.
Yeah, that's your Rich.
He got too excited.
He got me off balance here.
Mr. Rich.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, before I start, I just want to say I'm much more pleased with the Senate than I am with the House, and I'm impressed. So you're asking the right questions. I'd like to go a little bit further.
Please state your name, though, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. Ronald Rich. And do you need my address, too?
No.
Okay.
Nope. I'll
do my prepared testimony, and then we'll continue with the...
How much you work,
that'd be fine. I'm looking for you.
Sorry. Everybody knows where I live now.
That's okay.
My name is Ronald Rich. I am all of the following. One, president of Atmosphere Recovery, Inc., a company that manufactures advanced technology gas monitoring and control equipment for the energy industry. Two, an Xcel Energy customer with my primary residence in Edina, Minnesota. Three, a Minnesota Power customer on Swan Lake, about 7 miles downwind of the preferred Mesaba Power site. Four, an aerospace and mechanical engineer undergraduate from Princeton University. Five, an environmental and energies master's graduate of Stanford University. Six, previous manager of alternative energy projects for the state of Minnesota. Seven, considered an expert on conventional and innovative energy technologies. Eight, a concerned citizen who has followed with amazement and disbelief the numerous twists and turns in the failed Excelsior Energy Power Project proposals for years and years. And nine, a Minnesota and federal taxpayer very concerned that my taxpayer dollars are being used appropriately and not wasted on meritless projects. My purpose for coming today is very simple. I want to provide a dose of reality that some in the legislature appear to lack, although this is a better group. Excelsior Energy has spent an estimated $41 million. Now, if I understood this, you've spent 36, 9.5, and 10, so it's actually more than that. So far, using public grants and loans with absolutely no tangible result. And to refresh everybody's memory, here are a few of Excelsior's original claims. They were going to build six 600-megawatt coal plants on the Iron Range. None were then or are now needed, and not a shovelful of dirt has been turned. Two, their originally conceived coal plant was supposed to be operating by 2010, last year. The $41 million plus has mostly disappeared. Three, their coal plant was supposed to be innovative, with the promise of sequestering carbon at some unspecified future time. That's what clean coal really is. It's not just removing pollutants. Yet the design they proposed would not even allow significant sequestration. Four, a reasonable estimation of the original plant's power costs are 4 to 8 times higher than the Excelsior Energy promised. No electric utility or industry could afford the power, even if they did need it, if they built that coal plant. They have not yet completed the permitting process for the original plant at Taconite, which is their preferred site. And as I've personally testified many times, much of the permit information they needed underrepresents actual IGC emissions and resource needs. In short, for more than 8 years, Excelsior Energy projects remain at square one. And even given all their legislative exemptions, legal maneuverings, and political influence, there is not one customer for their power. Their project is an abject failure, technically and economically. Yet they want 8 more years, even having conceded IGCC coal is too expensive for market conditions. They now propose a gas plant. What the legislation, at least the one that I had most recently, does not specify type or size. And absolutely no gas plant is innovative. The legislation doesn't say anything specific, but here is my current understanding of Excelsior Energy's current scheme. One, they say they will build a gas plant at an approved site. I understand the site will be the Kittsville location inside the city limits of Hibbing, totally different from the original Taconite location and requiring all new permit applications. Two,
that's not true.
All right, that's not true. Are you proposing to build it at taconite?
That's what that says, yeah.
Okay, they're saying now they're going to build it at taconite and not Kittsville. So we'll continue on. They tell others the gas plant will be a small 100-megawatt plant that might be used to back up wind power. That I've heard myself and from the same group. If so, that means a standard, commercially available, open-cycle gas plant introduced in the 1960s that are in use all over Minnesota will be built. It is not economic or efficient, and in no way can be considered innovative, and it's not upgradable. They are still trying to find a customer for their gas plant power. But because there is limited need and the power from this gas plant would be expensive, there won't be a customer either. Five, they sometimes imply they will use the taconite site. Now they're saying they will use the taconite site. Excelsior hasn't said so, but the reason they at least earlier said they had to use the Hibbing site is that the original taconite site no longer will have a large gas line pipeline power brought to it. And that would be originally coming from a main line through taconite to Esser Steel. Esser Steel did not want that gas line, so it's not going to be built. The Hibbing gas plant site has a line 2 miles away, but is used mostly for Hibbing taconite, so only a small gas plant could be built there anyway. Otherwise, the gas pipeline to the plant needs to be much longer. More dollars will need to be spent to provide the gas. Finding a customer will be that much more difficult. And no coal conversion possibility either. Excelsior wants up to 8 years to build a gas plant. Given their track record, if this legislation passes, 8 years from now, they will have another excuse and want 8 years more. Don't throw good money after bad. In an area of budget cuts and with the need to support true innovative energy projects by the state, I respectfully request that you vote against this bill. And I can talk about whether or not you want doing informational hearings or not, but I'll be happy to answer any questions, and thank you for letting me speak.
Thank you, Mr. Rich. Senator Tomasoni, comments?
I think I made all my comments, Madam Chair. I think, you know, this is not asking for any more money. This is not, it's only asking to be allowed the plant that was intended to be built as IGC to CC to be used as to use natural gas as a source. And I mean, that's the whole gist of the bill that's in front of you right now.
I know Ms. Jorgensen's jumping around back there. I wonder if she wants to make some comments.
Mm-hmm. Somebody should ask them where they're going to get the gas
she
from.
She probably does.
Should I leave the chair now? Is anybody want to ask me any questions?
Hold on, Mr. Rich.
Okay.
Any comments? Any questions for Mr. Rich? Thank you very much for coming up. Appreciate your testimony. And then we are going to have Ms. Jorgensen. We've got one other testifier, but if you'd like to make a comment on that.
I'm sorry. Hmm?
No, go ahead. So. I was kind of joking, but I kind of wasn't. So,
well,
if you can just briefly, we do have one more
Chair Rosen,
testifier.
Members of the committee, just very briefly, just in listening to the discourse so far, what all this bill does is takes a site that, after spending significant public and private funds, we've actually gotten through a very difficult Minnesota power plant siting process after tens of millions of dollars, which is what it costs to get through this process. The state has issued a site permit for the first time in 30 years, our Public Utilities Commission, after an environmental impact statement was prepared by our Department of Commerce and the U.S. Department of Energy. And what I really am imploring you to take a look at is these power plant alternatives aren't fungible. They don't grow on trees. I would challenge anyone assuming or testifying that we have a robust wholesale energy market in Minnesota. In fact, other than wind developers, which are largely being overtaken by the utilities who are developing their own wind for their own account, there are no projects being developed to meet Minnesota's energy needs. Load growth continues. We've experienced the worst recession of our lives, but you can see that year on year, load growth is continuing. The underlying load growth is there. And what happens in energy markets is when you don't have permitted sites, we've seen now we've taken 7 years. We've had an air permit. The one that was really making me squirm was the notion that our air permit has not been processed or commented upon. Our air permit's been of record with the PCA since 2006, subjected to public hearings with administrative law judges. And what we have now is, for the first time in 30 years, Minnesota has successfully permitted a site for fossil generation. Right now it's coal. All we're saying is, why would the state, after spending significant amounts of public funding and this additional significant resources that go into these environmental permitting process, why would the state throw away this site option, the only one in the state, when what's likely to happen, given the difficulties in Minnesota of developing anything, in particular fossil energy, sweep that off the table, only to have utilities turn around and spend similar amounts of money to start over, probably out of state. And this goes back to what we were talking about in 2003. Why would we want dirtier out-of-state options in states where it's a lot easier to get an air permit? If you look at the Big Stone project, a fraction of the time to get a final air permit in South Dakota than as opposed to here, with three times the emissions this project have, why would we eliminate that option from what are our available options? I've heard testimony in the House before we pass this out of the House saying that there's this robust competitive market. And the truth is that in Minnesota, unlike almost every other state in the union, the utilities have a vertical monopoly granted by the state of Minnesota on generating and distributing power. We are supposed to have a robust competitive market. This is the only competitive alternative on the table to meet the utilities' needs, and it's already served that purpose on multiple occasions in the PUC. So,
Ms. Jorgensen, what other besides the air permit has not been completed?
Basically, the air permit and the water
appropriation.
Those are the two. And the
those are the two biggest
wetlands
ones.
Permits.
Wetlands
yeah.
permit.
I'm sorry.
Three.
What was the third?
And
one?
Then the wetlands permits, which are more of a federal undertaking. 34 major permits are required.
34, yeah. Well, the air and the air and the water are the major.
Air and water are the major.
Are
ones.
The major ones, and you're expecting those.
It depends on how many more layers of public hearings and how many years we're talking about. I mean,
that's why you need the 8 more years.
That's why we need once. And the reason it, you know, it's not because the air emissions are significant. The EIS concludes that the impacts are acceptable. Again, we have, you know, we have 1/1,000th the air emissions that were typically associated with coal in 2003, 1/3 of the emissions of the next best technology that's out there. This is a very revolutionary technology. And, you know, I always say we started this project back when mercury was a neurotoxin. We, you know, we remove all of the mercury from coal. That's a very very important to the state's interest. So I just wanted to I apologize for rambling on a bit, but I wanted to say as an entrepreneur and someone who's trying to make something good happen for Minnesota, we still stand by it and say this is a site that should continue to be an option in meeting need going forward. Thank you.
Stay close, Ms. Jorgensen. I do want to get Ms. Ellis up, though, from Fresh Energy to testify, please. And thank you for being patient, Ms. Ellis. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Senators. My name is Kate Ellis, and I'm here representing Fresh Energy. Fresh Energy is a 20-year-old energy advocacy organization. We're based right here in St. Paul, and our goal is to work for energy policies that will result in an efficient, clean, and fair energy system. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify today on Senate File 417. I will keep my comments very brief. I know we're almost at the end here.
You're fine.
Okay. First, as has been noted, we would just like to reiterate that this project was originally put forth as an innovative energy project. It was planned to be an integrated gasification combined cycle coal plant. And it was originally going to integrate some potentially very innovative carbon capture and sequestration components in the plant. Because it was deemed an innovative energy project, it was granted many special privileges and allowed to proceed outside of the normal planning and regulatory processes, which have been noted today. Now that this plant is planned to be a natural gas plant, it is it no longer needs all the special privileges and state mandates that had been, it had been given when it was deemed an innovative energy project. Currently, natural gas is vying for wind as the lowest cost new electricity generation source, as long as gas prices remain low and stable. So when a utility does need to add on additional natural gas generation capacity that is not currently or is currently included in their 15-year IRP, it should follow normal procedures. Under these normal procedures, the utility should submit plans to either build the facility themselves, or they should go to the open market with an RFP, get bids from private power, independent power producers, and select a project that will benefit the entire system, ratepayers, and their shareholders. That may be Excelsior Energy's proposed plant, and it may not be Excelsior's proposed plant, but that decision should be left up to the open market. The risk for ratepayers and shareholders with this bill is that they could get stuck with costs that are too high and power that is potentially unneeded since it didn't have to go through the planning process. That means high rates and less of a return on investments for shareholders. The technology now proposed for this plant is no longer innovative. Therefore, there is simply no reason to grant special advantages to this one particular gas plant over any other particular gas plant. We urge you to not advance this legislation and do not support it. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Ellis. Questions for Ms. Ellis? Thank you very much. Any questions for Ms. Jorgensen? Senator Dibble.
I've said, looks like Senator Tomassoni, I've said my piece.
So. Okay. All right. Fair enough. Senator Tomassoni, closing comments?
Well, Madam Chair, I want to thank you for your time, and I want to thank the committee for allowing us to vet this in front of the committee. We haven't given up on the IGCC concept. The bill before you is simply because if we can use natural gas in this project, we've gone through almost all of the siting needs and the environmental processes that need to be gone through in order to build a power plant. And so it seems like it would be a waste of time to do it again if in fact natural gas could be used in this plant. And the facts are that natural gas is very cheap right now, and coal has gotten more expensive. And so it just makes sense that if in fact somebody does need power and wants to build a plant, that this plant, having gone through all the environmental review that it needs to go through, should be allowed to use natural gas in the event that that's the most cost-effective fuel source. And that's what this is about. It's about allowing something that's been going on for quite some time to have an option that it didn't have before. It may well be that a gas plant gets built and alongside of it an IGCC plant gets built. We're not going to build anything unless somebody's going to pay for the power, and so there's going to be a need and someone's going to make a contract for it. So I don't think by allowing this particular project to use natural gas as a product for generating power, we've done anything special other than to say that in the event that somebody needs the power, this plant qualifies for natural gas. And so it doesn't seem to me that this is anything extraordinary.
Senator Thompson, the issue that does get me on this A1 amendment, though, is what Senator Howe brought up, and that's on line 18. It's not subject to contested case hearings. Why should this project be any different than an ethanol plant or some kind of biofuels plant that is subject to these contested case hearings?
I'll let Ms. Jorgensen address that, but my understanding is because these contested case hearings, they've already gone through the contested case hearings. They've had over 700 comments, and they've dealt with a real lot of it already. But that's my understanding, but maybe that's not correct.
Ms. Jorgensen.
Chair Rosen, members of the committee, the contested case process that is the EIS process goes through the same data set with an administrative law judge that a contested case that the PCA would go through. It is further made duplicative, and I think this was acknowledged by the PCA in our discussions with them, by the fact that because of something that's somewhat unique to Minnesota, there's the potential for a contested case at the Minnesota level, and that can take, you know, a couple of years, and then another contested case at the federal level, so that which could also take a couple of years, and then you can have litigation. So from the moment you get your site permit, and this is one of the reasons for this bill extending the duration of the site permit, and we've actually experienced this, the site permit could expire before you get your air permit issued because of the duplicative contested case that are layered one on top of another in the case of this project. On the natural gas-fired plant, we're not proposing any change to existing law. There's never been a contested case on a natural gas power plant's air permit. And on the IGCC, we're saying those emissions have been you know, when people talk about, well, gosh, you guys have spent a lot of money, it's literally millions of dollars of modeling and expert time and technical analysis that go into what goes into the environmental impact statement to the point where it's deemed sufficient in terms of analyzing the impacts. So from our perspective, this simply avoids duplication and waste. And you do get to a point from a regulatory standpoint where it is an endless loop where your site permit is issued, you go through years and years and years on the air permit, the site permit expires, you have to go back and get the site permit extended. And it does, the question is what public policy goal do those multiple hearings serve?
Madam Chair.
Senator Howe.
Madam Chair, I see Commissioner Grant over there. I'm just wondering if he could step up and maybe give us his agency's views on this. Is this a good idea to exempt this, and would this be something that would set a precedent or anything for the future? I mean, is this a good idea?
Director Grant.
Madam Chair and committee members, Senator Howe. First of all, I'd like to say that we've raised issues about the bill, and we found the Mesaba folks willing to offer some changes to this that have certainly improved the bill from our perspective, and I appreciate that. Bottom line, though, we have a concern that just fundamentally, the project is no longer an innovative energy project in the sense that it was originally cast, and that we're concerned about the precedent that gets set by establishing these kinds of exemptions from normal procedure. And as has been pointed out here, we don't think that if there's a clear need for the facility, and that can be established, that there's any reason why a project like this, since similar projects have been permitted and reasonably quickly, why this project should be any different. So we're not concerned about this project per se as a gas plant. We are concerned about the precedent that gets set by allowing the project to go through an amended procedure as suggested here.
Thank you.
Senator Howe. Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Senator Dibble.
Well, and to your question, Madam Chair, you know, there's a reason we have the provision of the allowance for a contested case, and it's actually to the points that Senator Howe brought up earlier, and that's so that folks can participate meaningfully in a process when the facts as laid out might be in dispute. And this is a different project than originally proposed, so we can't just simply take all the work that had been done previously and say this all applies. There are significant differences to this new proposal. And so to create this exemption is deeply troubling. If the facts are as they should be, there will be no problem, to my earlier points. The economic case can be made, social, environmental case can be made, and the need, you know, for the energy can be demonstrated. There should be no problem.
Okay. Mr. Erickson.
Madam Chair, Senator Dibble, I just want to reiterate that there are a couple of notions.
Thank you, Director Grant. Thank you, Director Grant.
The natural gas-fired plant, we aren't making any changes on contested case proceedings on the air permit. That just deals with the IGCC that's already been through a contested case that was referred to an administrative law judge, and there is duplication there to go back and go through another administrative law judge proceeding on exactly the same. The other thing is on the exemption from certificate of need. The genesis of that request is that under the commission rules, you can't seek an air permit until you have a certificate of need. The certificate of need process is a lengthy one. In many cases, no ratepayers are going to be signing up to take power that they don't need. But under the commission rules, if there's a bidding process, for example, and you bid into that process, those facilities are exempt from certificate of need. But I would suggest that because of Minnesota's cumbersome permitting process, a utility might say in response to a bid that doesn't have a certificate of need and an air permit in hand, thank you, but we'll go build it ourselves, because so that competitive piece of that. The other thing I'd like to point out is the reason, the policy reason for a certificate of need, it historically is to prevent utilities from building things that aren't needed and charge their ratepayers for them. This plant will not get built unless a utility decides it's needed and goes and seeks rate recovery from the commission. So I would suggest that at the moment where there's a willing customer, that the need gets factored in. But we are in a kind of a catch-22 under Minnesota law in terms of getting through the air permitting process and getting through that certificate of need process. But no ratepayer is being saddled with costs. There's no additional. The other thing I wanted to say is there is no additional state funding being provided to this project. You know, the work has been done. The site has been opened and given a site permit. And we're just saying, you know, the genesis of this bill was the permitting streamlining bill that already traveled through the process. We're in a little different situation because we're under the Power Plant Siting Act. But that's the genesis of this bill, is how do we get these projects that are in-state and big potential job creators to the finish line.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Erickson. Any further questions? Senator Tomasoni, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate your time. It was a very good hearing.
Like I said, an informational hearing. Members, we are going to have a Thursday's committee. We're going to have a hearing on the wind setback, 45 minutes max.
What is that issue
going to happen? So I do really appreciate the very informational, respectful hearing that we had today. Hopefully that will continue on Thursday. And we're also going to look at some of the SIP provisions that are in the House bill, and we're going to discuss those too. And we're not going to be moving on them at all, but we're going to get a good grasp of what's in there. So with that, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.